Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the Kia Exceed plug-in hybrid.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And Joe at RT.ie, and how long can this Miss Ireland competition last, I wonder, because we've a number of statements here from Dennis Finbar Cronin. He was the director of Miss Galway, Mayo and Sligo element of Miss Ireland. And he says, in light of the recent controversy, which was exposed here in Liveline, as you know, through a number of contestants, he has resigned forthwith as director of Miss Ireland, Miss Galway, Mayo and Sligo. The rules were bizarre, as you know, in this day and age. The contestants could only be eligible if they were unmarried or never have been married or never have given birth to a child and be of good character. Patrick McLaughlin. Patrick, you're director of Miss Limerick and Miss Clare.
Former director, Joe.
Oh, former, okay. Why did you resign?
Well, Joe, I resigned because I made a promise to somebody. I'm a man of my word. Last summer, we crowned Caoimhe McGowan Miss Limerick. And mm-hmm. Caoimhe McGowan is an extraordinary young woman. She is currently studying to become a criminal justice lawyer in Trinity College. I'd love for you to talk to her at some stage, Joe. She has a lot in common with you. She is a champion of the underdog and someone who stands up for what she believes in. And when Caoimhe was crowned Miss Limerick, she expressed nerves and anxiety about moving forward in the Miss Ireland competition. Mm-hmm. And I promised Caoimhe at that time that no matter what happened, I'd have her back and I'd stand by her.
Okay.
So
what has happened?
Last week, Caoimhe notified the organisers of Miss Ireland that she didn't wish to continue on in the Miss Ireland pageant, but did not want to give up the title of Miss Limerick, but wanted to withdraw from the Miss Ireland competition.
Why?
She was morally opposed to the monetization of the voting system.
That you can buy votes this year.
Yes. She felt that it put people from wealthy families at a greater advantage than those who don't have the means. So that was her reason for wanting to pull out of the Miss Ireland final. And on Friday morning, I received an email from the organisers requesting that I take the crown and the title from Caoimhe and give it to the first runner-up. Mm-hmm. And like I said, Joe, my father before me, my late father, was a paragon of honour and integrity, and I live my life in a way that ensures that I'll get to see him again someday. So when I was told to do that, I kept my word to Caoimhe.
Who told you to do that, Patrick? Was this...
The organisers of Miss Ireland.
Who are who?
I am not going to be the person to name them.
It's a public body that makes lots of money. Brendan, Mark Scully and Sean Montague. Would those two names ring a bell?
I don't want to get any letters, Joe, so I'm not going to say any names.
Well, they're on the public record as being, we've been trying to get them for nearly a week now to say, basically to ask where's the money going and about these rules. And the answer to the rules, they say these are the Miss World rules, so they're their rules. But we want to know where the money is going when you buy votes this year.
But can I speak to the rules for a moment, if you may? First of all, I would like to commend Blue Scannell on the stand that she took. She is also an exceptional young lady. At 19 years of age, to stand up and speak out like she has, it's absolutely fantastic. And I completely agree with Blue Scannell on the issue of the rules. In my capacity, in what I was doing for the last few years, I ignored those rules. We never allowed Miss Limerick or Miss Clare to be called a beauty pageant. We always called it a people pageant. And if a young mother wanted to enter Miss Limerick, she was allowed to enter with the knowledge that we wouldn't be able to send her to the Miss Ireland final because Miss Ireland was governed by Miss World's rules. And in the interest of balance and fairness, I have to bring to the table the fact there have been shocking rules in Miss Ireland's rules over the years, mm-hmm. one of which I requested to be removed 2 years ago. and Miss Ireland removed it because they could. And there have been rules about height.
And this, okay, we'll go into that in a second, but this one you asked to remove was this ludicrous suggestion that contestants must have beauty of the face and the body.
Yes, and that was disgusting. And I asked for that to be taken out, and it was taken out. And there have been, previously there was a height requirement. You had to be over 5'8", I believe, to enter Miss Ireland. There was also a bikini round, and all those things have been taken out over the years. But, as I said, I admire, while we're on the subject, I have a big problem with the rule that says you must have an Irish passport, because that is to suggest that an Irish girl born to non-Irish parents is less Irish than a girl born to Irish parents. And in 2021, that's not good enough for me either, to be honest.
Okay. Do you know Dennis Finbar Cronin, who's also resigned?
I do know Dennis Finbar Cronin very well. He's a very good friend of mine. We actually do a podcast together, believe it or not.
So the two of you are gone.
A
significant number of the contestants are gone. A significant number of the sponsors are gone. So has the competition any credibility?
I can't speak up for that competition because I no longer work for that organisation, Joe. But as I said, I think a bigger light needs to be shined on Miss World. And I'm not excusing Miss Ireland in any way.
Give us time. We're only a small little programme on a little grain of sand in the Sahara Desert of taking on Miss World. But anyway, let me bring in, stay there, Patrick, 51551, watch hands, joe@rt.ie. Veronica Didashenko is on WhatsApp. Veronica, good afternoon.
Hi, guys.
How are you? You took a stand against Miss World because you won the Miss Ukraine competition. What happened, Veronica?
Yeah, so I won Miss Ukraine in 2018. Mm-hmm. And then I was disqualified for being a mother. And I stood up to the unfair rules of the beauty pageant, which discriminate against women based on their protected characteristics like family status, maternity, and pregnancy. And what is absurd that their terms and conditions of entry include a requirement that the competitor is a person who has never given birth to a child.
Yeah.
And this implies that it's not only mothers who have children who are not considered to be eligible, but also those who have given birth to a stillborn child or mothers whose child has passed away since birth. This leads to us back to the only logical conclusion that Miss World believes that women are no longer virgins and are not worthy contestants. It's a completely irrational belief to hold in 21st century, I think. And I was absolutely shocked that Miss we applied to Julia Morley. We sent her many letters, and last month we sent one more official letter from my organization, Right to Be a Mother, to Julia Morley about these absurd rules, but we didn't get any response. And I do believe that if there is anything Miss World organization can do to help women globally, is to change its rules and become a truly inclusive platform reflecting the diversity of women's life experiences. And it only takes a slight change in the wordings to send a powerful message of hope to those who are struggling and have been pushed further to the margins of our society. And we should support each other today and create opportunities for women, and should be destroying and fighting harmful stereotypes that are holding us back. So as this year, one more thing, which is very important, this year is 70th anniversary of Miss World.
Yeah.
And I think that they should take that chance and enter and post-COVID era as a reformed organization with changing those just disgusting rules.
So, Veronica, when they threw you out of the competition, when they discovered that you had a child, my God.
Yeah.
Who did they replace you with?
It was another girl from the final of Miss Ukraine.
Okay.
Yeah, and she represented Miss Ukraine in the Miss World pageant. But my fight, it's not about the Miss World pageant or Miss Ukraine, but my crown. It's about women around the world who facing discrimination like every day. And there is, we can see case of Blue, we can see case, many cases, like last year, Miss Bolivia was disqualified after she said that she was pregnant 3 months after she was crowned Miss Bolivia. Can you imagine that? It's like, this is nonsense.
Nonsense isn't the word. And when you were disqualified, Veronica, you launched legal action against the Miss World organisers under the Equalities Act 2010, and the equality, and you took your case to the Equality and the Human Rights Commission. How did you get on?
You know, like we were working. I have big team like in Ukraine, in London, and we were working with the best lawyers in UK. But you know, UK Equality and Human Rights Commission, they say that they will not take my cause forward because it's not so many girls who are, you know, examples of girls who are discriminated in the Miss World pageant, which is, I think, is nonsense reason also. But of course, I'm like very disappointed for their response, but I'm also encouraged, you know, by so many people around the world who have shown their support for my campaign, Right to Be Mother, and share just their shocking stories of maternal discrimination. So we're going to continue our fight, definitely.
And what do you think of the argument, Veronica? That's only a, you knew what you were entering, and it's only nobody knows in many ways what the competition is based on. Nobody knows. I don't know, how do they make money out of it, and what do they do with the money?
About that, you can buy votes. It's what you mean?
Yeah, but generally, how does the Miss World organization, did anyone look into them about how they make money and what happens to the money?
Money with I won, or what do
no,
you mean?
No, the money that the Miss World organization, obviously they're in it, they're making money out of it.
Yeah, so there are many sponsors who are supporting So they're just like in Ukraine, it's a big, so in like in Latin America, in Eastern Europe, it's a huge competitions, and they're super popular and super famous, and everyone wants to take part. So there are many sponsors who are trying to work with the Miss World.
Okay. It's, I want to, and do you think the Miss World franchise are aware or care about the controversy in Ireland with people resigning left, right and centre this year?
Yeah, that is the most, you know, it's what I was speaking. I spoke to Blue yesterday. We had a live together, and it's what we were discussing. Like, if sponsors and if Miss World would, will they, if they understand how much positive how much positive support they will get for changing rules, they will can attract so much more sponsors and so much more support, and so much more companies would like to join them in their, it would be inclusive platform and everyone would like to work with them. But instead they're like banning moms and bringing us to like, I don't know, dark ages where like these archaic rules were written. You know, these rules were written like 70 years ago.
I know. In 1970. But Veronica, there's the Miss World competition. There's the Miss Universe competition.
Yes.
And
exactly.
Is there a couple of other ones as well?
It's Miss World, Miss Universe, Miss Earth, and Miss International. And four of
Miss
them,
Earth.
Yes. And four of them has, they hold the same rules.
The same rules.
Yeah.
Well, if there's four competitions, there must be some money in it. I see. Miss Earth is 84 entrants.
Yeah. You know what?
I presume Greta Thunberg wins that every year, does she, Miss Earth? She's so brilliant at protecting. It's not about protecting the Earth. It's about so-called beauty, Miss Earth 2020 and 2021. So there's four of these competitions throughout the world, and they're all making money.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know, like, I really care, like, it's for competition, and they have, like, a huge influence on the society. Like, in just last year, in 2019, like, 900 million of people tuned in to watch the final of Miss World in 140 countries.
Wow.
Can you imagine, like, it's a huge, enormous amount of people who are looking at this pageant and who is seeing those absurd rules which which the pageant really, like, establish, and it's like enormous, like, harms in our generation. Like, it's it's definitely, there is no place for that in nowadays.
Well, bizarrely, given you mentioned Miss Earth earlier on when you were talking to Lisa, and we've looked it up. In last year's competition, there were 84 countries entered into Miss Earth. A significant number of countries withdrew, including Botswana, Crimea, Czech Republic, England, Hungary, Haiti, Israel, Northern Ireland, Papua New Guinea, and a number of countries returned, Estonia, Finland, Greece, Iceland and Ireland. Who is the Irish Miss Earth? I wonder. Who runs the competition? Who represented us at the Miss Earth competition? And wherever it was, some obviously took place somewhere on Earth, but we don't know where. Anyway, you say there's four. There's four of
the real
these.
Question, yes, no, the real Patrick, question is: yes. Did the winner of Miss Earth go on to compete against Miss Mars and Miss Saturn? Because Miss Earth sounds like a very, very weird title to
Patrick,
have.
Patrick, can I ask you a question? Are you paid for, the job that you had, that you resigned from, fair play?
Yes.
Were you paid for that?
No, I wasn't.
No, okay. And was Dinny paid, Dennis Cronin?
No, he wasn't.
Okay. And why did you do it? Just for...
Yeah, it's strange.
I can't speak for Dinny. My reasons for doing it were I wanted to be an agent of change. I've been an Irish male model for years. I've been around the Irish fashion and beauty scene for years. And with some notable exceptions, it's kind of a bit of a cesspit. And I will say, with some notable exceptions, I mean, the one springs to mind, there's an amazing woman in Galway called Mandy Maher, who runs a modelling agency like a family and treats her models like sons and daughters.
Yeah.
But there are many that treat their models like monkeys and pay them peanuts.
I took
this challenge to try and to bring change. As I said, we didn't discriminate against anybody. We wanted to give extraordinary young women a platform. And I know people have been commenting online, and a gentleman rang into your show last week asking, why do these competitions exist? They're so outdated. And for me, the answer is clear, because it gives extraordinary young women like Veronica and like Blue and like Chelsea and like Kayla and like Holly Carpenter a voice, or at least it should. Mm. And it gives them a platform to speak to the nation, and it gives us, the nation, a chance to meet these extraordinary young women. That's why these competitions should exist. That's what they should be all about. In Miss Clare 2019, we had a young woman enter who was a suicide survivor. And in her attempts to take her life, she lost three quarters of one of her legs.
Oh my God.
So she competed in the Miss Clare competition, and she walked down the catwalk with a prosthetic leg.
Yeah.
She was able to go on Ryan Tuberty's show and tell her story because she entered the Miss Clare pageant. That's what it should be all about, Joe. That's why I got involved. And that's the very reason I'm out now, because I can't break the system.
Okay. And by the way, have we a Miss Universe? I know apparently the Miss Earth Ireland contestant is Eileen Mary O'Donnell. Do we have a Miss Universe primary
we
here
do
in
have
Ireland?
A-
Okay.
We do indeed. Yeah, we have a Miss Universe Ireland every year. It's a completely different competition, though.
In what way?
It's run by different people and run by.
Oh, I know that. I know it's a different money making thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's a different organisation, but okay. I don't know their rules, so I can't.
Apparently, the Rosa Tralee competition, which will come as a shock to a lot of people, does not allow women who have given birth to enter. That's outrageous.
It does, I believe. The Rosa Tralee does allow women who have given birth to
enter. Okay, well, we'll check that. Just as a line I've been given. Okay. Yes, Veronica. Is your campaign continuing, Veronica? Because as you know, Julia Morley and the Miss World organization, they just basically say nothing when these issues are raised.
Yes, they're being absolutely silent. You know, I absolutely agree with what was just said. Like, the inclusivity pageants can be really empowering for women, and especially those from, I don't know, less privileged or under backgrounds. And there was a case with Angela Ponce, who won Miss Universe Spain. And it was a woman who was transgender. And they allow Miss Universe transgenders. And she talked about her victory as a victory over transphobia. And when Deanne Kentish Rogers, she was amazing, like representative of Miss Universe Great Britain, when she won and she was a black girl, it was recognition of black beauty. You know, winning a beauty pageant is also like powerful platform for further professional and financial success. And these successful global events have helped to launch the careers of many, many contestants. So I absolutely agree with what was said. And about my campaign, like how my Right to Be a Mother continues to attract support from women worldwide, and many of whom have similar stories to mine to share. And I launched a petition on the change.org website, and it has around 25,000 signatures. So I encourage everyone to sign it to change the rules of Miss World. And there is also Blue launched her petition on the change.org too. So everyone could go there and sign it.
Let's wait and see. Okay, we've been on to Brendan Mark Scully and Sean Montague again today. I think that's the seventh day in a row trying to get some response from the Miss Ireland organisers. Okay, Patrick McLaughlin, thanks indeed. Veronica Didyshenko, thank you for your contribution today. Your campaign continues, obviously, Veronica.
Yes, my campaign is 3 years old now. Okay. And, you know, every year we have a huge media coverage. We have many women's rights organizations in the UK and in the US who support us. Okay. And we're really, like, grateful for all of the support from everyone.
And I'm told that Miss Universe Ireland 2020 is Nadia Sayers. Okay, thanks to everyone. 51551, one more chance.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Paul Roach is in Wexford. How are you, Paul?
Not too bad, yourself, Joe?
Oh, good. I didn't know about this. But anyway, tell us. I don't know what way people hear this, because anytime we do the National Lottery and people say it's not gambling, but your point, please, Paul, when you contacted us.
Well, Joe, I suppose my point is they have the draw on the Saturday night draw in the middle of the kids' movie, you know, the family evening movie on a Saturday night. Mm-hmm. And it basically, you're sort of somewhat coming to the climax of the movie, and all of a sudden then we have to stop for 5 minutes to look at, you know, the National Lottery draw, and the kids would sometimes say, is the movie over or what's going on, you know? Mm-hmm. But I suppose basically it's, you know, it's allowing gambling advertising directly at young kids. And I suppose my point is, could it not leave it till after the movie, or leave it till 9 o'clock or after the news or something like that? But in the middle of the movie.
Oh, I thought that's when it did happen, was 9 o'clock. You were saying it happens at what, 8 o'clock?
Yeah, about 5 to 8 o'clock, yeah.
And how long does it go on for?
Oh, well, sure, there's what, I think there's about 3 draws, 3 different drums. I don't play it myself, but I suppose I'm just aware at the moment there's so much gambling advertising happening, and I think the Labour Party are making some noise there about limiting gambling advertising, because obviously it's gambling is made out to look like it's fun, but not fun when you're losing, Joe. Not that I gamble myself, but yeah, I can imagine it's not fun if you do lose.
So you were saying in the middle, I think there was a sports award on this Saturday, but the previous Saturday was Pete's Dragon, which is definitely a children's movie. Yes. Starts at 7, finishes at 9. Great time. But you're saying in the middle of that, it's not mentioned in the listings, but in the middle of it, you say they break for at least 5 minutes to do the lottery draw.
Somewhere around that 5 minutes, and obviously it's all glitz and glam and lots of money, and sure, it looks easy. Buy a ticket and you're a guaranteed winner in the kids' view anyway, I suppose, but us adults no different, don't we? But yeah, like next week they have the Pirates of the Caribbean, and you know, right in the middle of the
movie.
But
you see, the lottery would say, well, we give money to good causes. They've ads at the minute saying Age Action Ireland have got into the final of something sponsored by the National Lottery. Why wouldn't they, says you? But anyway, and they say thanks for giving your money to the lottery. This is where it goes.
Look, I don't have it's an adult game. If you want to play the lottery, that's fine. But I suppose my point is don't be putting a hand in front of under 18s, vulnerable kids.
For example, now they're one of the biggest advertisers now in the country, if not the biggest, the National Lottery, including for RTE, by the way.
Yes.
I hasten to add. And though in the criticism that's been on Liveline for many a year about the lottery, we've never had any kickback from RTE about it, in fairness to them.
Yeah.
But they're a massive advertiser in newspapers, especially they don't advertise, I think, generally in the Irish Times, but they do advertise in the tabloids. You'll find on a Friday, if there's a big lotto prize that weekend, there could be four wraparound pages. I think in one Sunday newspaper, once the Sunday World, I counted 17 different ads on 17 different pages for the National Lottery. So they're aiming at a particular part of the population.
Yes.
And they seem to be very successful. But what's the harm?
Oh, no harm, Joe. I've no problem with it whatsoever. If you're over 18, spend your money how you wish, see best. But, you know, there isn't what Network 2 or RTE2, I don't know what they call it now, but
They could put it on
that station, but not in the middle of it.
Well, maybe we've asked RT for a comment and there's none forthcoming. But maybe the lottery are paying for the 5 minute slot.
Oh, sure. There's nothing for nothing, Joe. I'm sure they are. I don't know. You're closer to all that than I am, Joe, there.
But, well, I don't know. I presume. I don't know about these things in television, especially.
Yeah.
But like the National Lottery, they're everywhere. And like I made a point last week that they sponsor the National Journalism Awards.
Yeah.
Now, there's fantastic journalists in Ireland, but it's a bit odd, I think, having a gambling company sponsor the Journalism Awards. Now, as it happens, it cost them nothing this year because they were all online. There wasn't a big knees up in the Mansion House or whatever. And by the way, the people who win that year after year are, I'd say without fail, the finest journalists in the country. But they do sponsor, like it was a cigarette company sponsoring the National Journalism Awards, there'd be uproar.
Yes,
but it's a gambling company, but it has that veneer, that sheen, that shine of it being the state own it. Well, they've sold it to pay for the children's hospital, and we own a certain part of it now, but it's primarily owned by the Toronto Teachers Pension Fund.
Yeah.
And they own a lot of lotteries across Europe as well. But it has that sense, because they give a certain amount to good causes.
Yeah.
As chosen by the minister, invariably.
Yeah, I've no problem about all that. That's fine. That's whatever adults want to do. But just maybe change the time slot on it and put it after the watershed. Don't normalise it. I'm sure when that came out first, maybe there wasn't children's big movie nights on Saturdays, but there is now. So, you know, change it to suit the audience.
Okay. So you're saying, it finishes, if you add in the 5 minutes, the big movie, I think, finishes just after 9. You're saying let it finish at 5 to 9 and then put in the ad.
After the movie. I think Pat Short has a music thing there afterwards for another half an hour. But, you know, just leave it till the movie is over at least.
And do you play the lotto, Paul?
I don't, Joe.
Why not?
Because your chances are a couple of million to one to win it. So, no, it's not something I do, no.
I was looking at it recently. And stats can massage and lie, but I think more people die between, God forbid, now there's no connection. More people die between buying a ticket in the lotto and actually winning the lotto. You follow me?
I would imagine so. Yeah.
And the stats. Yeah. That's the stats. That's the way. Okay. I'm supposed to be saying money matters. I don't know what are the money matters. Okay, I'll take a quick break. 5-1. Thanks indeed, Paul.
Okay, Joe.
Okay, good to meet you. 5-1, wipe your hands.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Maurice Colgan is in Swords. You're an Elvis super fan, Maurice. What did you come across? Luckily, you've got a bit of luck. Go ahead. What happened?
Hello, Joe. I entered an auction in Beverly Hills for the contents of Priscilla Presley's former home.
Okay.
And I bid on a little statuette of Elvis Presley at the age of 13.
Mm-hmm.
And I won the bid.
Okay, and is this a rare statuette?
Well, it's not really rare. They were on sale in Elvis Presley's birthplace shop in Tupelo, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that they were there in the first place was I came up with the idea for a statue of Elvis at 13. I wrote to the mayor of Tupelo suggesting a statue of Elvis would be a great tourist attraction for the city of his birth.
Mm-hmm.
A year to the day he got my letter, they unveiled a lovely, beautiful bronze statue of Elvis.
Okay, and how much was raised, do you know, from this sale of the contents of Priscilla Presley's home?
Well, it only finished yesterday afternoon, so the sales prices, you know, because I believe there was 4,000 items. You know, it was a very, very big house. You know, and it was jewelry furniture, clothes, garden furniture, you name it. But the only Elvis item I spotted was the little Elvis statuette.
And did Elvis live in that house?
No, this was Priscilla's
house. Well, apparently the contents were worth, wait for it, 13 million. And what should you pay for the statue?
No. The house was sold for 13 million.
Oh, okay.
A couple of weeks ago.
All right. And the statue you bought is worth, you paid how much?
Oh, I paid $600 for it.
Okay, and why is Elvis at the age 13? Is that when he first did his first recording?
No.
Okay.
It's the age Elvis actually left Tupelo, and him and his family, they went to live in Memphis.
Oh. And do you have much Elvis memorabilia?
Oh, hundreds of pieces.
Wow, and where do you keep them, on display or...?
Yes, they're on display here. You know, they've been covered by newspapers here in Ireland and on television.
And what's the most unusual thing you have, Morris?
Well, we had letters from Elvis back in 1961.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we don't have the original letters anymore. I have photocopies of them framed and photographs of Elvis movie stars who wrote to me, his co-stars.
Okay, so, lovely, yeah.
Dolores Hart, who was in two of his films, Anne Helm, wrote me a lovely letter. She was in the film Elvis Followed That Dream.
And, Boris, would you be worried about any of your memorabilia being stolen?
Well... it's at the back of my mind, you know, but the double glazing on this home, you know, is pretty substantial, and I have double doors, front and back, and I have a nice, neat, handy iron bar.
An iron bar? Are you not serious?
No, I'm just joking, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, the guards are only 2 minutes away.
Do you want to tell me, we don't know where you live, what's the most expensive item do you have, do you think?
Well, I suppose it'll be the letters from Dolores Hart. She was a very beautiful film star. She starred with Montgomery Clift and Anthony Quinn and all the other major stars after starring with Elvis. And I have maybe 24 letters from her.
Mm.
And, you know, combined, Elvis fans collect everything, you know. And, when it comes to the bidding, it all depends how much people are prepared to pay. You know, it goes into the thousands.
Yeah. Do you know Dolores Hart is now an American Roman Catholic Benedictine nun?
Yeah, I spoke to her. She called me on the phone once.
Okay. And what did she say to you on the phone?
Well, a BBC correspondent was trying to get in touch with her, and she emailed me to see would I put her in touch with Dolores. I called the Abbey, and I gave them the message, and 10 minutes later the phone rang, and it was Dolores Hart herself.
Wow.
You know, I nearly collapsed.
So tell me honestly, Maurice, if somebody, don't be cruel now, if somebody broke into your house wearing blue suede shoes, would you set your hound dog on them or return them to sender, or would they land back in Heartbreak Hotel?
They'd end up in Heartbreak Hotel, I'm afraid.
Okay.
I'm an excellent shot.
Okay. Pog salad, Annie. Okay, thanks indeed, Maurice Colgan. And by the way, can we see your memorabilia? Have you, well, given that people can't visit your home,
yes,
are they on a website?
I'm constantly on the internet. If you type my name on Google, there's dozens of stories, you know, and loads of fans have been here to see it.
Oh, you're great.
Plus reporters, you know, from the press.
Oh, that's great. And do you think are you the person in Ireland with the biggest Elvis collection?
Oh no!
Oh wow!
I don't know about here in Ireland. There's a guy in Denmark has a replica of Graceland.
A full size replica.
Full size replica, and there's also one in Northern Ireland. Elvis fans are maniacs.
They are maniacs.
Seriously, I'm a very, very serious Elvis fan. The prime thing about it is Elvis had an absolutely extraordinary voice.
Yeah, he did. Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, and you're not worried about any suspicious minds trying to break into your house and you'll end up in the ghetto with no one of your memorabilia left.
Yeah, good one, Joe.
Okay, Maurice, you're a tonic. Well done. I'm glad you got a bit of luck there now. And
I'm delighted with it.
Yeah, well done. That's great now, especially in these times. Will you send us in a photograph of it?
I will. Yes, okay. Surely.
Now, are all your valuables, your Elvis memorabilia, insured, or can they be insured?
Well, you see. It would come under the house insurance, but there's no way of sort of valuing it, because it's like I said, things are only worth what people are prepared to pay for them.
That's
you know,
true, yeah.
So my collection. I tell you, while I'm here, Harry Crosby was going to buy some of it.
Harry Crosby, what was he going to buy?
He was going to buy a selection of it he was going to open a music venue down in Wexford. But unfortunately, that fell through.
Vicar Street South, yeah.
But the little museum in Dublin, in Stephen's Green there, they're interested in the Dolores Hart memorabilia, you know, for a display. And the Rock and Roll Museum in Dublin, they're interested having some of it.
And you too are going to open a museum, I presume, when the world gets back on its feet, if ever. Because memorabilia is really, it's not a thing of the past, so to speak. People love it.
Oh, yeah. In this age, you know, of downloading music, it's not the same as having a 12-inch album in your hands.
Yeah.
You know, and actual stuff that you can hold and put up on the walls and stuff like that, you know.
I'm reading Elton John's autobiography at the minute, called Me, and he met Elvis.
Oh, yeah.
But he wasn't overly impressed.
Well...
He couldn't believe how big his entourage was.
Yeah, that was the downfall with Elvis.
Yeah. And he said the only performers now who have as big an entourage as Elvis did, hangers-on, he called them, are rap artists.
Yeah. I mean, Elvis surrounded them. I mean, they were friends of Elvis, but they were paid friends.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah. But some of them were absolutely genuine friends. I met a few of them in Memphis.
And did you ever meet Elvis?
No, unfortunately, no. Never got to meet him.
And of many people in our... Well, he never... He obviously served in the US Army, and he stopped in Prestwick, I think, on the way to Europe, but he never played here or in the UK, sure he
no,
didn't.
He, the only place outside of America that Elvis performed was Canada.
Canada?
Yeah.
And what about Hawaii? I thought he played... Well, Hawaii's
well,
part
America.
Of America. I know,
you know,
I know.
It's,
no, exactly,
it's in the
yeah.
United States.
Yeah, yeah, okay. And had he an aversion to flying or just... Well, his career, he
well,
died.
Well, initially he did, but then he bought himself two planes. They're parked outside Graceland.
Yeah, and you've been to Graceland?
Oh, yes. We won a trip to Graceland on RTE.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
And was it mad?
Oh, it was wonderful. We went there with Joe Jackson, you know.
The journalist,
the rock
yeah.
journalist, yeah,
yeah.
And he made a radio documentary
oh,
on
excellent.
RTE.
Yeah.
Was broadcast in 1998.
And Elvis will be 44 years dead this year.
Yeah, it's a great loss to the world.
Yeah. Okay, and but of course he'd no Irish connections, had he, whatsoever?
Well, the story was traced back to County Carlow, Hackettstown. They have an Elvis festival every year there now.
Wow. Hackettstown?
Yeah. It was the story was in the Irish Times.
Oh, then it must be true.
Yeah, of course.
So you're saying Elvis's family in Ireland are originally from Hackettstown, County Carlow.
Yeah.
Lovely little village.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and do you remember your first? I won't detain you too long, Morris. But did do you remember your first interest in Elvis?
Yes, of course. I'd heard of Elvis, but I had never seen him. Mm. A school friend told me, you know, oh, this Elvis guy's got a great voice. And I was living in Birmingham at the time, and on my way to school, I popped into a cafe, and they had a jukebox. And I spotted the name Elvis Presley. You know, it's a very unusual name, as you know. And I thought, I'll try this guy. And I put the shilling in the jukebox, and on come a song called I'm Playing for Keeps. Well, I'll tell you what. I just stood transfixed. I couldn't believe
that's incredible,
the
yeah.
quality of his voice.
And do you remember the first Elvis song you ever heard, Morris?
That's the one I'm talking about.
Give me the name of it again so we can look for it on our chart or cart wall.
Yeah, I'm Playing for Keeps.
I'm Playing for Peeps?
For Keeps.
Oh, for Keeps, sorry.
Yeah,
yeah
I'm
sorry.
Playing for Keeps. It's a ballad.
Okay, and you say the moment you heard that song...
Yeah.
You were hooked.
Oh yeah, we you know, I was brought up in a musical home, John McCormack and Joseph yeah. Locke, you know, and Frankie Lane and Sinatra and Crosby and all the rest of them, you know. So I knew all the great singers, even back to Al Jolson, you know. And but as soon as I heard Elvis, I thought I've never heard a voice like this.
And what year was Playing for Keeps?
1957.
Wow. 64 years ago.
Yeah, it's a lifetime, you know, and I'm big into music, you know. I love Beethoven and Tchaikovsky and all the rest of it. My children are classical musicians. My daughter's a brilliant pianist. She won a scholarship to a school for musically gifted children in Manchester. Now, I've got a bit of a Mancunian accent.
Yeah, I gather that, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm from Inchicordia.
And how did you pick up the Mancunian accent? What part of Inchicore is that?
The story there is from Inchicore, we moved to Dolphin's Barn, from Dolphin's Barn to Golden Bridge, from Golden Bridge to Crumlin. And at the age of 7, my family moved to England. And I actually went to school in England, hence this accent.
And when did you come back to Ireland, Morris?
1981.
Okay. And were you involved in music yourself? Obviously, your family are gifted.
Yeah, no. I tried the guitar when I was 15. I was in a bit of a skiffle group. We played in a few pubs around Manchester, but I wasn't very good, Joe, and I gave it up.
Well, there would have been a lot of competition, wouldn't there? A lot of
massive, massive. At that time, everyone was buying guitars.
And trying to be the Beatles or Elvis.
They were all trying to be Elvis.
They're all trying to be Elvis.
Even John Lennon wanted to be Elvis.
Yeah. It's incredible. It's an incredible, incredible story. Well done, Marcia. What were you saying? Don't be cruel. Do you want to hear a few bars of Don't Be Cruel?
That would be wonderful.
Okay.
I love that song.
You know I can be found sitting home all alone. If you can't come around, at least please telephone. Don't be cruel to who heart is true. Baby, if I made you mad for something I might have said, please don't forget my past. The future looks bright ahead. Don't be cruel to who heart is true. I don't want no other love. Baby, it's just you I'm thinking of.
And what year was that, Morris?
That would have been 1957 too.
Well, how come I have a memory of jiving to that in the Iron Ballroom? Isn't it a jive song, isn't it?
Oh, it's a lovely catchy tune.
But I wasn't even born, so how could I remember it? Elvis is in our DNA, isn't it?
Yes, he is. He's the greatest movie vocalist that's ever lived, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, Rose MacDonald's in Wicklow. Rose.
Hello there, how are you?
You say you're Elvis's biggest fan in Ireland.
Yes, I am very fond of Elvis, always was.
Yeah, and have you been to Graceland?
I have.
And tell us.
Yes, my son was in Michigan at the time, and when I went out, we decided to go, and we went to the Sun studio, first of all.
Of course, yeah.
And where Elvis and Johnny Cash and them started their career. And then we went to the Graceland.
And tell me about Graceland. Was it mad, Rose? What's it like?
No, it was lovely. It was lovely.
Is it tasteful?
It is. I tell you, the only thing I found about it was one room, and he had tartan wallpaper on the wall.
Tartan?
Tartan, like a Scottish tartan, you know, that tartan
Of course. And was it the flock wallpaper? Was it the raised wallpaper? Do you remember?
No, it was just on the wall.
Yeah. You couldn't,
just the ordinary wallpaper.
You couldn't touch it now?
No.
And what, you're giving a tour of Graceland?
And we were very lucky that day, because at the time of the year I was there, it was kind of slack. And we had a good look.
Oh, well done. And have you any Elvis memorabilia, Rose?
And it was
Elvis mementos.
Yes, I have this Elvis. He made this in Hawaii in 1975. This DVD.
A video, whatever. Yes. At the time.
And it was one that there was 40 countries that time.
Yeah.
And they were in on it, and there was 1.5 million people, billion people.
Well,
I saw it that night.
I remember that Elvis Live from Aloha or something. Yeah. It was called Elvis Live from Hawaii. And do you remember, Rose, the first Elvis song you heard?
No.
You see, with John Morris does, you see.
No, I wouldn't have remembered that.
Okay, but you're still a big fan.
A big fan of him, yeah.
Okay. We must get, when this pandemic is over, we must try and get some of your memorabilia on public display, Morris, because it sounds fascinating. Sounds fascinating. Okay, Rose MacDonald.
Thank you very much.
Thanks indeed, Rose. Rose, how have you managed during the pandemic? Well, have you?
Well, now, I'm 88 year old.
Yeah, that's young.
My sister, was a COVID.
Oh, God.
Got COVID. Okay. And I happened to be down that week with her.
Okay.
And I had to isolate for 14 days.
Okay.
And in actual fact, I wasn't positive. I was negative, so I was all right there.
Okay.
But then this 5K, that's hard.
Is it? Why?
Because I can't visit Dublin or go anywhere.
Yeah, you're in Wicklow. Okay, well, hopefully soon enough. Are you on your own?
Yes, I'm living on my own. My son is down in Goring, but he's outside the 5K, so he can't come in. But I tell you, Joe, during the time I was isolated, Dunn's, Tesco's, and my butchers, and the Gardaí collected my shopping for me, and I would say they were brilliant.
So a big shout out to Dunn's, Tesco, the Gardaí,
Ferrybank Butchers in Arklow.
Ferrybank Butchers, great butchers.
Yeah.
In Arklow.
Care Plus Chemist.
Okay, in Care Plus in Arklow as well.
Yeah.
Okay, and Tesco and Arklow.
And then my Ray Menton, he kept my fires, my home fires burning.
Do you want to tell us a bit more about that, Rose? What was his name?
Ray Menton.
And what he supplied to people, guess.
He brought all my coal and blocks and everything I needed.
Well done, Ray, and well done all the people around you.
Yeah.
Okay. And is Ray the local kind of man that helps out everybody's?
No, he's just a
decent
coal merchant.
Oh, he's a coal. Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Well, he'll never be slack, would he, for work? No, okay, Ray Menton. Big shout out to Ray Menton and everyone in Arklow who helped Rose McDonald through the so far. And Rose, can you not say that your son is your bubble person?
Well, the thing about it is, he doesn't want to come in to me, and I don't want him to come in.
Oh, you're
either.
Very good. Okay, and can you do Zoom or any of this modern stuff, Facebook?
I have a tablet. He got me a tablet for Christmas.
Well done. And are you enjoying it?
You know what? For the first few days, I was going to throw it out of the window.
Oh, no, don't do that.
But now I'm flying.
Brilliant. Do you love it?
Love it.
Brilliant. Well done. Oh, you're brilliant, Rose. Let me, I was going to ask Morris how he managed during the pandemic. Anyway, Rose, well done, everyone who helped you out. Where's Trish Murphy?
Thank you very much, Joe.
By the way, what part of Wicklow are you in, Rose?
Arklow. You know, there's 19 arches, you know. You probably could come over the 19 arches if you're passing through.
I do indeed, over the bridge there. Mm. Now, Strathnakelly, do you know where Strathnakelly is?
No.
Well, according to Trish Murphy, say there, Rose, you might help us. Trish, you say Elvis's relatives are from where?
Strathnakelly it's between Hackettstown and Keneally.
Hackettstown, Keneally.
And
Tinahealy. Well, Tinahealy's in...
Tinahealy.
Okay, and Strathnakelly.
Yeah, Strathnakelly. It's a tiny little district.
Okay.
It's probably best known for Zion Cow Pub.
Okay, you have a terrible line. Is there any Presleys?
We had Presleys in the area. I'm in a windy place. I'm thinking I get out of the wind.
Yeah, you're in the wind. Okay, you try and get out of the wind, and I'll go to Peter O'Dowd. Peter, I'll come back to you in Strathnakelly, where there's Presleys buried in the local graveyard. I hope they're dead. They are. They're buried in the local graveyard since the 50s. Peter O'Dowd.
Yes, Joe.
Why did Elvis never come this side of the Atlantic?
Because his manager was a guy called Colonel Tom Parker.
Yeah.
And he was very, very controlling.
Yeah.
And he was also an illegal immigrant in the United States. So he was afraid if he left the US that he wouldn't gain re-entry on return. So as a result, he wouldn't allow Elvis to travel outside the US to perform any concerts.
Interesting.
That's the reason behind it.
Okay.
So unfortunately, we in Europe didn't get to see him live, which maybe we might have, you know.
And are you an Elvis fan as well, or just?
Oh yeah, I would be. Yeah, I'd be sort of a fan of. You know, Elvis, the Beatles, all that. I would have grown up in that era.
Yeah.
So I would have been a big Elvis fan. Still am. Still love his music, you know.
Yeah. Okay, where is it? Rose is still there. Tom Hoolan. Thanks, Peter O'Dowd. Tom Hoolan in Galway.
Well, how are you?
Good. What have you got belong to Elvis?
Well, as you might know, Joe, I collect rare books or books and what have you. And I bought a box of books about 12 years ago. And Elvis's cookbook, The More of It. And it's signed by his father and signed by Nancy Rooks, his cook.
Excellent. And what's the provenance of the book? Do you think it was in Graceland?
I don't know. Like I said, I bought a box of books, Joe, and it was in it. I bought a box of books, I think, at an auction, and it was in it. And it's signed by Vernon Presley as well. It's signed by his father and it's signed by Nancy Rooks.
Okay.
She was his cook.
And how much did you pay for the job lot?
Well, I don't know. Maybe 35 euro or something.
And you've got a bit of a bargain, didn't you?
I did, yeah. Well, I'm an Elvis fan. I'm not a huge Elvis fan.
Yeah.
I love him and I love his stuff because I grew up with him. You know, I mean, I'm 69, so I grew up with all that music. But yeah, I love his stuff. And I collect rare books and old books, you know. And
oh, lovely.
That book, you know.
Okay, so, okay. You have Elvis's... and did Elvis... were these Elvis's recipes...
Oh, yeah, it's just all his things and what he ate and how to cook them.
Okay.
And you'd want a strong constitution to eat it. And I ain't kidding.
Okay. Don't be cruel. And is there a recipe for in the ghetto, as we used to say in Dublin?
Okay.
Tom, we're back to Trish. Thanks, Trish Murphy in Stratnakelly, wherever Stratnakelly near Hackettstown.
Stratnakelly is a tiny, tiny little district.
Yeah.
Between Hackettstown and Tinahealy.
Okay.
And Shillelagh area.
Shillelagh, okay.
So kind of scattered around that area. We've had a good few Fresleys, so I'm still on the look. Like, I mean, anywhere I see a Fresley headstone, now I'm trying to check it out. But if you look up the 1911 census,
yeah,
we had some Fresleys in the area that time, and in Carnew as well, down as far as Carnew.
Carnew is across, and is Wexford or Wicklow? Carnew is it's across.
Wexford,
isn't it?
Wicklow, Wexford area.
Wicklow, yeah, everything.
And what happened was there seemed a dispute over a piece of land up in Stranakelly, and they ended up in the Assizes, which was the court in Hackettstown.
Yeah.
And Elvis's ancestor lost the case.
And that?
He basically left the area after that.
And do we know what year that was? 1850 or something?
It's back in the 1700s.
Oh, wow. Oh, well done.
So they reckon it's about eight generations. Now, there will be people doing more that would have studied more than I have, but
yeah.
they reckon it's about eight generations.
And are you living in Stratnakelly?
I'm not too far from it. I'm in a place called Killinure, which is about 5 kilometres away from it.
Okay.
So.
And what's the name of that graveyard?
The old cemetery in Kilquiggan.
Kilquiggan?
Yeah. The woman's first husband was a Presley, and she had some children with him.
Yeah.
And she died quite young, and she remarried to a Bourne.
Okay.
Bourne, so you'd have the names Presley firstly, and have Bourne then for the second half of her family.
All right. And where's Kilquiggan? Is that far from...
Yeah. Sorry, no, it's not, no.
Okay.
It's not far from Stranakelly at all. No, it's all in the one area.
One area. Okay. And are you involved? Have Stranakelly got a Tidy Towns competition or an action group?
We've done very well. Ballymolton and Stranakelly and Kilquiggan and Kilmure have all done very well in the County Wicklow Pure Mile.
Okay.
We've all been award winners over the years.
Okay.
That's basically it's an initiative by Wicklow County Council to pick rubbish and tidy up and get to learn a bit of the heritage of your area.
Great, and it's a lovely part of the country.
It's actually a highly heritage area. We've got to have ring forts and things going back to the very early times. And again, now right up to Elvis. Elvis is kind of bringing us into the modern end of the heritage system. So.
Well, well done. Well done.
We'd really like to see it promoted a little bit more.
Okay, well, you're doing your bit.
The Wicklow Way walk comes through here. And
oh,
it becomes
lovely.
A new town to the Wicklow Way.
Well, you're doing well today, Trish. You're getting the name out there.
I hope so, anyway. So that'll be a new one. That'll be a new address for you. Now, Stranakelly. And, it's right in that there's a very small little district.
Well, I'd love to see that graveyard. I love graveyards.
And one of the couple, it's just up off the main road.
We'll find that soon. Yeah. Okay.
And there's a new cemetery, and the new cemetery is across the road from St. Finian's Church. And then if you follow that road a little bit further, I just turn off for the old village in Kilquiggan. And the old village cemetery is in the middle of the village.
Okay.
And the two names on that headstone will be Presley and Bourne.
Excellent. So who needs sat-nav when we have Trish Murphy? Well done, Trish. Trish from Stratnakelly, and Kilquiggan is the name of the graveyard. It's kind of on the cusp of...
They're in the Carnew area for a long time as well. Up to 1950s, they had shops and that in Carnew.
Okay.
So...
Great part. Okay. Okay, there's all the connections. Thanks indeed, Trish Murphy and Rose MacDonald. 51551, one more chance.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And property and inheritance and Priscilla Presley's house for sale. But a bizarre aspect of property in Ireland has been unfortunately inflicted on Mark Cromwell. Mark, good afternoon. What happened?
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Thanks for
taking the call.
Yep. Thanks for making the call.
No, you're welcome. It's going to probably go back to the 11th of January and the show over Matty and Michael, the couple that got married to the inheritance tax. That's kind of
In Stonybatter and...
Yeah, that's correct, yeah. So,
and the reason, just to remind people, there's been a good bit of coverage, the reason Matty and Michael got married was to try and get around this crippling inheritance tax.
Beat the system. So, you know... unfortunately, in my eyes, the inheritance tax, it's a draconian tax. It's something that was brought out in the late 60s. You know, fair enough. In those times, you know, property was handed down to a father or a son. But, you know, times have changed, Joe, and I suppose my circumstances will be kind of prevalent to that. So I had a grand-aunt who lived in Stony Batter as well, not far from Matty and Michael's own home place. And so Kathleen was her name. So she passed away on the 1st of May of last year in St. Mary's Hospital in the Phoenix Park.
Okay.
So Kathleen would have been married. Her husband passed away in 1995. A devoted couple. Never had any family of their own. Kathleen did have a number of miscarriages in her life, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose I was born in 1977. And it's funny, going back a couple of weeks, you were talking about the mother and babies. I was born out of wedlock, so I was. And the local parish priest actually knocked for me, my mother, to be brought up to the home in Dunboyne. I live in County Meath.
Okay.
And thankfully that my grandmother and my grandfather was strong enough to tell the parish priest kind of where to go.
Yeah,
so that's what happened there. And I was moving on. My mum travelled to she moved over to the UK then to work. And between my grandmother and grandfather and Kathleen up in Dublin, they would have been very kind of influential in my upbringing. So they would have been.
She was more than an aunt to you, more than a grand aunt,
If my mum passed away in 2017, so she did, and if my mother was alive, she'd be the first person to say that Kathleen was closer as a mother to her than what my own mother was.
Okay.
So, and, you know, even though myself and my mother had a mother and son relationship, Kathleen was still kind of the number one. So, Kathleen passed away on the 1st of May, and through her will, I had been left her property in Dublin, her house in Dublin.
Okay.
Kathleen hadn't got much, so she had a few bob in the credit union and so on and so forth. Look, that's neither here nor there. But unfortunately, because of inheritance tax laws, I have to pay 33% of that. Now, that's 33% is the figure for everybody. However, because the inheritance tax goes under three categories, A, B, and C.
Right.
A being mother, or father, and sorry, son and daughter,
okay.
B being kind of niece, nephew, and then C is anybody else. So your entitlement would be kind of lower. I think it's 330,000 in category A. It goes to 32,500 category B, and then where I am, it's 16,500 category C. Is all I'm entitled to tax free, and then it's 33% on top of everything on top of that. So, you know, I would have very fond memories of Stony Batter, and as I said, I would have spent a lot.
How much inheritance tax will you have to pay?
Close on 100,000.
Wow.
Because of the property value in Stony Batter.
And it's as if your grandaunt, who, as you say, reared your mother like a child.
She reared me like a child.
As if you were a neighbour, a stranger.
And that's it. She could have left to the cats and dogs home, Joe. And, you know, Kathleen loved her animals, so she did. But, you know, she might as well have left it to anybody. But, you know, I was down as her next of kin. I would have been, you know, when her husband passed away, I was working in Dublin Airport at the time. We used to go to Glasnevin Cemetery every Friday. If she wanted anything done, she would always ring me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we were very, very close. If there was, and she was like that with everybody in the family, Joe. If there was an issue or a problem, everybody turned to Kathleen. She was just that type of person. And,
when Kathleen died, 33 1/3%, less 16 grand or whatever, 33 1/3% of her property, which she had bought after tax, I presume, after paying tax.
She owned the house herself.
Yeah.
It was one of them artisan cottages there in Stony. Exactly the same house as what Michael and Matty had. If you picture that house.
But 1/3 of that goes to the state.
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
But my point is, when she was buying the house.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, right, okay.
Yeah, when people are paying for the house, they're paying for it
after. Oh, sorry, apologies. Yeah, she bought the house
after tax income,
60s, early 70s, whatever it was, yeah. So.
And there's no nuances in terms of sanguinity. There's no
that's sanguinity. Why I contacted yourself. I wanted to see, has anybody else
went through the same system. Like, with the advent of the laws and our wonderful solicitors and barristers and everything that we have nowadays, surely that there is somebody that will stand up and say, this is wrong. Mm-hmm. Somebody who, fair enough, if the 33% has to be paid and hire even the band, but, you know, somebody who's worked all of her, Kathleen worked all of her life. She worked in the custom house. She worked in guest houses. She was a fantastic mm-hmm. cook. You know, she worked hard all of her life. So did her husband. Her husband worked in Irish Independent newspapers as a printer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they were hard-working people. They paid their taxes. They paid their dues. And to think that you cannot leave whatever you have left when your time has come to whoever you want, mm-hmm. I think it's a holy disgrace. And the fact that times have changed now, Joe. Like, there are grandmothers and grandfathers and aunties and uncles who are rearing family and so on and mm-hmm. so forth. And they step into the breach of where a mum or dad might not be there.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So, you know, I do feel that you should be treated mm-hmm. as if you were their son or daughter.
Okay.
I was involved in the Scouts. I was involved in summer camps. If there was an opening of an envelope, Kathleen would have me at it, in fairness to her.
Right.
And, you know, as I said, she was very influential. And had
so whatever, well, people pay heavy enough tax on income during their lives, and other mm-hmm. tax, VAT and tax on
Indeed.
Cars and petrol and customs and alcohol and everything else you pay tax on, you can't miss it. But when you die, unless you have a close relative that you can leave your house to, they will pay some inheritance tax. But your 33% of the value of your house goes back to the state.
Back to the state, yeah, correct.
God, that's why the Apples and the Facebooks and the Googles of this world don't buy houses.
And then there you go. I do think that it's wrong. And, you know, I've had people say, well, you're very lucky with what you have.
Course,
without a shadow of a doubt. But I still, I have no family of my own. So if when time comes when I want to leave my will, you know, it's going to be the exact same process.
Yeah. Okay, Mark. Thanks, indeed. That's Mark Cromwell in Dublin. joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Back to COVID nuances. And who was it the other day that was telling us in this programme that where they are, the COVID lockdown is done on localities, depending on where the outbreaks are? John Moylan and Mary have contacted us separately. John, you're locked down by COVID and frustrated. Why?
Well, Joe, good afternoon. I'm involved in construction, and the problem I see is at the minute is the kind of a double standard and the lack of clarity and the lack of consistency in policy.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, construction, in inverted commas, is closed. We're locked down.
Yeah.
But we've been told we're back on the 5th. Arrangements have been made. Contracts have been arranged. Customers are expecting us and so forth. And then we get mixed messages between Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar that we aren't. But our sites generally have 3 to 4 people on them. That's what they have.
Okay.
And they're trying to tell us somehow that operation, even though it's outdoors, socially distanced and precautions taken in the proper way, is a hazard. Yet if I'm working literally in the same town, and I'm thinking of a particular example near me, with 35 people on another site, just because that's social housing, that's not hazardous. That if I was building in a well-known place, a leak slip, with thousands, that's not a hazard. If I'm building the National Children's Hospital with 600 or 700 on a site, that's not a hazard. That flies in the face of all common sense.
And how many staff would you, because you, your company is, you make homes and deliver them.
Correct.
Okay.
The company is called SIP Energy in Athenry. So we have a manufacturing plant where we make homes and we ship them to site and we put them up in a matter of days. So delays of days in an organisation like ours have a much bigger impact
because
it can be the size of a whole project rather than just standard. So there's been no consistency and no allowance. And even if we weren't doing that, Joe, the fact is an outdoor activity in a half-acre site with 3 people cannot be considered to be hazardous when it's okay to get on an airplane, when it's okay to get on a bus,
when it's
okay to get in the ferry. And I find that the interests of the state are being looked after because all their projects are deemed to be important, but the wider industry is not.
Okay, I want to let Mary in. It's been hanging on. Mary, what's your situation that your build is locked down?
Hi, Joe. It's my daughter that's buying a house that's being built.
Okay.
She was told she'd be in. She paid the deposit in September. She was told she'd be in by Christmas. Now, she's worked all through the lockdown. She's worked every day since she left school, paid her taxes, earned her, mm-hmm. her, you know, save for her deposit and the whole lot. She's passing a house in the state that's been built for social housing. You know, she's willing to pay for her house. She's willing to provide a house for herself. She's willing to, you know, fund all this herself. And yet her house is at a standstill, but social housing can go ahead. Like, that's discrimination, really and truly. You know, I know there's a housing crisis, but yes, why don't they let the people that are willing to pay for it? The woman that was on Friday was an example as well. You know, it's so, I can't understand. Will they not get COVID in these estates?
Yeah, I know, and people are so near the end of their bill.
That's
just,
right.
Yeah, just
John.
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I beg your pardon. Sorry to cut across. But even if you were working on a site now that is three or four people or five people in a private site and it's closed down and you're told you have to lock down and whatever it is, that's fine. But they can literally walk down the road, walk up to the foreman on the social site, say, actually, I'm at a loose end for the next 5 weeks. Can I work? And they say, oh, great, you're a pastor. We'll put you on the job.
Okay.
And you're working. So they haven't actually succeeded in removing the risk as they perceive it. So
I've got to leave it at that. I'm sorry, I'm way over time. Thanks to John Mylan and Mary. Joe with RT.ie continues. Annette Egan produced Cara Hare and Sound. Maeve Mooney is the BCO. And Ray Darcy is next.